Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. Don't forget, you can check out the show. Oh, there's so many ways to check out the show, but I want to plug Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast. And also, you can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle, same thing, at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome, one of our regulars. Love talking to this guy. He's all full of energy all the time. Dorsey Hager, who heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can find more at columbusconstruction.org. Twitter handle is BuildCentralOH. And there's a lot of things going on in BuildCentralOH. Hey, Dorsey Hager, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me again, Flash. How's everybody up in Cleveland? Is the snow finally melting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And temperatures in the 60s next week. I like that. Winter's still going to be with us. You know that. But honestly, I'm pumped. I'm pumped. I'm so happy that we have a union-friendly president in the White House. Things are moving. They're moving on that COVID relief package. I like what's happening. It's still not easy. But what got me going this week is when I found out about the West Virginia governor who admitted that right to work is not the answer. In fact, here, let's play the clip again. We play this a couple of days. Let's listen, because this is just too much, too good to be true. Let's listen here on the show.
Well, the bottom line to the whole thing is just really simple. We went out and passed a right to work law. We got rid of prevailing wage. We built fields all over the place in thinking that they will come. They didn't come, did they?
Dorsey, could... They didn't come, did they?
So there's an old line when I was growing up. Keep it simple, stupid, right? And that is the most simple. And that, I mean, he's right. We built fields and they didn't come. All our Chamber of Commerce people, all our business roundtable people said, if we do away with prevailing wage and reduce wages, and if we make right to work so we have less unions, so they're not meddling in our affairs, a bunch of people will come and a lot of businesses will come and lots of tax dollars will be spent here. And guess what? We did all that, and that didn't happen. It just didn't happen.
And to add to that, you probably heard about Montana. Montana shot down right to work this week, and they got, I believe, 29 Republicans went along with the Democrats on that one. So certainly good news. Certainly good news. It's all going in the right direction.
It is good news, and you know, I've talked about this in the past. Our friends to the west in Indiana, you know. Right to work is devastating, and it's devastating for all the building, for all the unions and all the building trades, all the AFL-CIO unions. It's absolutely devastating because it leads to reduced membership, it leads to reduced negotiation power. Wages, benefits, health care all suffer. But prevailing wage, and I'm glad that he mentioned that in his clip. Prevailing wage was devastating to our friends in Indiana when they did away with Indiana's common wage, which is basically prevailing wage. That was really devastating to the building trades unions, and you started to see and still continue to see in Indiana, Kentucky, and Michigan. And we see it here in Central Ohio. We're not immune to it either on projects that don't require prevailing wage, fair contracting, or don't have community benefit agreements on it. You have less qualified contractors from the South bringing less skilled, less trained, lower paid workers. And you say, well, why are they coming from the South? Well, they're coming from right to work states like North Carolina, Mississippi, Tennessee, where the wages are much lower. There's very little, if any, benefits. And they come here to make a little bit more money, which is more money than they'd be making there, but obviously a lot less than here. And the only thing that does is it just lowers the bar, and it creates a race to the bottom. And I know I've said this to you before, you know, Flash, the Insulators Union, I was a business manager there, and Dan Poteet, our business manager, organized a contractor, and the contractor said to him, he said, you know, the reason why I wanted to sign with you guys is because you're going to take care of all my training. You're going to take care of getting me qualified people. I can spend my days going out, bidding work, getting work. And he goes, and also he goes, you know, I want people that work for me, that make a good wage, have health care benefits, because that's the type of people that I want to employ, and that's the type of people I want to work with and have them out there making money for my business. So it's just good for the whole community, and I'm glad you started the show off with that clip. I've played that clip for a few friends. I've heard it. It was sent to me by a good friend of mine a couple weeks ago, and it's amazing that the governor has seen that. And maybe they'll do something in the legislature in West Virginia to turn it around, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Virginia, though, in the meantime, is moving to get rid of right to work, and they've had right to work there for, I believe, over 70 years. That state's really changing. So we're gonna stay on that one. Hey, I want to call your attention. You might want to send this out to your brothers and sisters in the trades. Go to IllinoisEPI.org, IllinoisEPI.org. Frank Manzo, who we had on the show a couple of days ago, did a very comprehensive study covering all 50 states on right to work. All 50 states. And there's 27 that are right to work, 23 are not. And he made the comparisons. It's really, really good. So you might want to check that out. Good stuff there. Yeah, I want to get into the meeting that Biden had at the White House with labor leaders, including Sean McGarvey of the building trades, Rich Trumka led it, Terry O'Sullivan of LIUNA, the machinists were there, the electrical workers. I mean, he had a really good crowd of people, and the topic was the infrastructure. It was real simple. We gotta move the needle in the right direction on this issue. And I'm just wondering, at this juncture, what are you hearing? What are the results from that?
Well, I think that the labor leaders were very happy to have that meeting with President Biden. You know, Lonnie Stevenson from the IBEW, who was on President Biden's transition team. You know, Mark McManus from the UA was also in there. Eric Dean from the iron workers. So everything I'm hearing that the meeting was positive, is productive. You know, the president talked about the importance of ensuring that union workers play a key role in the sustainability of our infrastructure. He wants to grow and expand on our infrastructure, and he's also keeping an eye on, you know, climate change and a lot of the green jobs that an infrastructure bill could create, which is good. And that also leads to, you know, what we talk about on your show a lot is the need, and we're doing it a lot, is the need for training to making sure that next generation of workers is aware of these jobs, aware of these positions within the building trades, and that we're reaching out to them, especially in the underserved communities, and giving them the opportunity and the knowledge on how they access the training to get into these apprenticeship programs and how they get these jobs and are able to provide for their family. So, you know, there was a wide range, not just infrastructure. They talked a lot about the assistance with COVID relief measures. The president touched on the distribution of vaccines, which, you know, it's amazing what leadership does here in the last 90 days. I mean, they're really ramping up the vaccine effort. You know, it looked like maybe by the end of the year, everybody who had wanted a vaccine would have gotten one. On Inauguration Day, President Biden said that they'd reduce that time frame, and now it was probably going to be the end of the summer. Now he and Dr. Fauci and everybody there is saying that it looks like by the end of May that everybody who wants a shot can get one. So I just think it's incredible the leadership that we're seeing out of D.C., you know, and like anything else, you know, we're not going to agree with everything he does, and everybody's not going to agree, but at least he's showing true leadership. He's putting people in position that they're productive and proactive. And another thing, and I had this conversation with a friend of mine at dinner last night, it is absolutely amazing to wake up, hit your alarm clock, shower, shave, drive into work, turn on the news, and not hear a bunch of crazy 17, 25, 35 tweets that were released by the president the other night. It's COVID relief. It's infrastructure. It's protecting union wages and jobs and growing the middle class. That's what's coming out of D.C., and that's what we want to hear. And I think that's why a lot of people voted for President Biden, especially, you know, in the suburbs where Democrats, you know, created a foothold and kind of reclaimed some of the suburbs. I think there's just a lot of middle class moms and dads who have kids in school or kids in college, and they're like, you know, this 4 years was maybe slightly entertaining, at times very tragic, but let's get somebody in there that can steer the ship that's pretty normal, and let's get back to basics, you know, job creation, education, workforce development, and let's do those things.
Cut the nonsense and get back to business. You know, you're speaking of the lightning speed quickness of this. I'm reading that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and more than 230 trade groups in Washington are urging the Congress. Now, I know they're wrapped up with the COVID relief bill right now, but they plan to jump on this right away, the PRO Act and then infrastructure. but they want to enact some type of legislation by the 4th of July. Dorsey, that's like 4 months away. That's pretty aggressive.
I mean,
yeah.
In government terms, that's warp speed. That's incredibly aggressive. You're right. And I think all of this, again, you know, goes into, you know, we were talking off the air a little bit. You know, a lot of historians on both sides of the aisle are saying that it looks like that Joe Biden's going to be the most union-friendly president that this country's had in 75 years. And it's not just, you know, we talked about last year, build back, you know, build back, build back, build back. And it's like he says, and it's like President McGarvey says, you know, it's build back better. You know, these jobs that we're creating that pay good union wages are going to help restore the middle class, and it's also going to rebuild America's infrastructure. So I'm so glad that they're tackling a lot of these issues. I'm glad that he's bringing people to the table that can help him get this stuff done. Now we just have to do on our part on the local level, educate our friends, family members, and members of our local unions to make sure that we keep pushing the envelope and getting some of this done. You know, we had a great roundtable call with Senator Sherrod Brown a couple months ago, and that's a couple of things that myself and a couple of the local labor leaders said here. You know, this is great, and the words out of D.C. are awesome, but let's make sure this resonates down to the states. Let's make sure it resonates down to the cities and municipalities, especially where we have high pro-labor elected density, high Democratic density. Let's make sure that they're doing a lot of the same things as well, so that way that a lot of these people in these cities that are suffering can get back to work and start providing for their families as well.
Dorsey, you and I have talked about rebuilding America many times on the show. Do you realize how many jobs can be created? Because right now, our infrastructure, isn't it rated like a D-plus or something like that? I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. We're talking millions and millions of jobs. And when those people are employed, the money goes right back into the community, right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, you talked about us having a D-plus grade for infrastructure. There's third world countries out there that have better infrastructure than us. And when we talk about infrastructure, I know everybody thinks about roads and bridges. It's not just roads and bridges. It's our highways. It's our schools. It's our hospitals. It's our research centers. It's our research facilities. It's the things that we're doing that, you know, if we ever come into an event like this again where we have a mass pandemic, where we'll have a lot of the research centers where we can mass produce these vaccines and these safety gear. You know, we talked about this last year when the pandemic started, and we don't have to go to China or somewhere else to get gloves and masks. We can do all that here. And I think that that's why it's so important to invest in our infrastructure. And the other thing that people don't think about either when they talk about infrastructure, it's also high-speed internet. You know, a great story, I have a friend of mine that travels all over the world for work, and he was in France a couple of summers ago, was out in the country, rural area, got a flat tire, and he's like, oh, great. He's like, I'm sure I don't have a cell signal to where I can call to get assistance. He went onto his iPhone. Not only did he have a cell signal, but he had an internet signal to where he could look up the closest garage and have the person come out and service his car. And those are things that we definitely don't have here. You know, you go to most of our rural communities, specifically outside of the big counties, and you go to a McDonald's or you go to a Wendy's or a Panera in a rural community late at night, and you see kids either there in the restaurants or after the restaurants closed in the parking lots in their cars, with the lights on from their screens and their computers, doing their homeworks and research assignments because they don't have internet access where they live. And I think that's a real tragedy.
Yeah, it's called the digital divide, and we've touched on that. Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be done. Right now, I need to take a quick break. Dorsey Hager on our live line. He's with the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. More to come from Dorsey. We're going to get into the innovation district that's happening in Central Ohio. Later in the show, Congressman Tim Ryan. It's all part of America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens. Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, most recently Pandora. And remember this, when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. And let's go back to our live line with this 5-star guest, Mr. Dorsey Hager. The Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. Talk to me about this innovation district. I know a lot of things are happening in Central Ohio, and I guess this is just part of it. So what's the story here?
This is enormous. This is huge. We talked about before the break about infrastructure and rebuilding the infrastructure here. Ohio's really leading the way under the leadership of Governor Mike DeWine, new president at Ohio State, Dr. Christina Johnson, and they're investing about $1.5 billion in Columbus Innovation District, which is going to be on West Campus, Ohio State. Anybody's familiar with Ohio State, it's going to be west of 315 on West Campus, just north of the Plumbers and Pipefitters Hall, Local 189. But the Columbus, this is a direct quote from Governor DeWine, the Columbus Innovation District will be the third anchor in our strategy to build on Ohio's growing dominance as a world leader in medical research and healthcare talent. The districts will attract researchers who can create, develop, and share their ideas with the world from Ohio. And this is looking just in the central Ohio area. Like we said, it's going to be over a $1 billion investment, but it's going to be about a $3 billion economic impact over the next 10 years, with expectations of attracting and retaining like top researchers, top scientists. And President Johnson said in her statement the other day that Ohio State is committed to producing over 22,000 graduates in the next 15 years in the STEM field, health science, computer science, and other fields as part of the investment. So we're really excited about this work coming in. There's four projects that have already started, like I said, on West Campus, the Kenny Road, South Elaine Avenue area. It's going to be a lot of work. There's going to be great things being done in partnership with Nationwide Children's Hospital to create the first proton therapy facility to treat certain types of cancers and cancer patients. And it just shows what happens when the electeds, Governor DeWine, Mayor Andrew Ginther, like the mayor said, you know, this is going to solve some of our greatest challenges, and this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. But it's when they come together and they work with Ohio State University, who's one of the leaders here in research and development, and they get the funding, and they realize that we have the people here that can build these facilities, and I think it's going to be great, not just the city in Central Ohio, but I think it's going to be great for the state, and I think it's really going to help us attract a lot of wonderful people here. So we're really excited about it.
Building for tomorrow. That's what it's all about. Good stuff. Good stuff. What's this about certification here? Central Ohio training certification? Can you explain what that's all about?
So we were talking about Mayor Ginther a little bit. He reached out to me last summer, and I'm constantly working with his staff on things. And, you know, we were talking about Building Futures and the success of Building Futures, our partnership with the county and the Columbus Urban League. And the mayor said, you know, this thing is great, and it's great you're getting people into good union-paying jobs, middle-class jobs. He's like, but what do we do with those kids that maybe don't want to be a plumber or don't want to be an electrician or don't want to take that building trades route? He's like, or what do we do with the kids that maybe the capacity's not there? You know, not everybody can get in the building trades. We have to find something for them to do too. And I said, you know what? That's ironic that you've talked about that, Mayor, because I think Leland Bass, our program manager at the Urban League, I think we have an idea that can support that. So Leland and I, last year, October, November, kind of in our meetings and stuff, you know, didn't sit down and do it all in one day. Obviously, it took a lot of, you know, trading notes and trading paper and stuff, but we were able to sit down and come up with a basic a program and some pen to paper, basically a VTech program. But it's not just for building trades careers. We're going to work with the Central Labor Council as well and partner with them, as well as partner with the NAACP and the Columbus Urban League. And it's a job readiness program. We're looking at a 6 to 8 week program where adults can come in, they can work on some of their employability skills, they can work on financial literacy, work on, you know, math. We can give them some basic skills that they need. And then during that 6 weeks, we're going to have employers, not just the city and the county, who employ a lot of maintenance workers who are covered by unions like SEIU and AFSCME and CWA. We're also going to have Ohio State come in. They employ a lot of maintenance workers at Ohio State. They employ a lot of food service workers that, you know, make good wages with good benefits. We're going to have them come in, talk to these adults, and whether they want to be a mechanic for COTA, our Central Ohio Transit Authority, if they want to be a bus driver, if they want to be a postal employee, if they want to work maintenance for the county, we're going to get them on that path and show them how they can do that and give them the training necessary and lead them to where they can go to help them get into these union jobs. So this program's in its infancy right now. We're having meetings with Mark Fluharty from the Central Labor Council. We're still meeting with the mayor's staff. You know, I think we're right on the precipice of hopefully launching a pilot in July. I know the mayor's excited about it. He's already said that he would like for us to have some resolution to this in the next couple of weeks so he can discuss it in his State of the City in March. But, you know, we talked earlier about infrastructure and COVID relief. I think you're going to see a lot of money being poured into the cities and counties for workforce development, for not only people that are unemployed but underemployed, and also people that have lost their jobs due to the pandemic, and also restored citizens. And we want, you know, the building trades has shown that we can train people for the careers of today and tomorrow and give them that training to get on that direct path to the middle class. And we want to partner with the Central Labor Council and the City of Columbus. And, you know, Franklin County is going to play a role as well. And we want to get these people in this area and our community trained so they can get some of these jobs.
Very exciting. You know what? Do me a favor. Anybody that's involved, your partners, and I know you have many, let our producer know about that. We'll get him on the show. This is definitely something we want to follow up. And I like that timetable you said by July. So we've got a couple of months that we can really delve into this. And hopefully it'll become a national model. You never know.
No, you're absolutely right. You never know. And like I said, it's interesting. I've talked to people at the State Building Trades as well, and ACT Ohio and Kitty French. And, you know, this isn't revolutionary. I think there's other building trades and labor councils partnering around North America doing similar things. But we're excited to try to do our part and partner with our friends at the Central Labor Council. So it'll be interesting. I'll keep you updated. So
very good. ColumbusConstruction.org Twitter handle is Build Central OH. Mr. Hager, you take care. Be safe. We'll talk to you in a month. All right.
Sounds good. Do me a favor. I know that you got a heavy hitter batting cleanup right after me. Tell the congressman I said hello, and I appreciate all he's doing for working people across the state of Ohio and in this great country of ours. And also put a bug in his ear and tell him to go ahead and pull the trigger. We'd love to see him run for that Senate seat.